Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome to the best of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy as always to be with you on the afternoon drive. Yes, today we're going to recap a couple of segments that we've had in 2020. We've had a lot of interesting ones. But with baseball coming to an end, the Major League Baseball season coming to a close with the Dodgers winning the World Series on Tuesday night, I thought it was a perfect opportunity to recap a baseball segment we had earlier this year with Billy Ripken. Does a tremendous job for Major League Baseball television, for the MLB Network. Of course, he's the brother of Hall of Famer Cal Ripken. I thought it was interesting. He wrote a book talking about analytics in baseball and how it's evolved. And it's bizarre to me. When you hear the word analytics, you just think of basic statistics. I mean, these are things that you would never even think of. And Billy Ripken wrote a book talking about the idea that a lot of it is hogwash. It was interesting. Very interesting segment. If you haven't heard it yet, that's coming up in just a moment. Also, we're going to replay an interview with Danny Tarkanian, the son of Jerry Tarkanian, the late, great Jerry Tarkanian. Incredibly interesting story. He wrote a book about his dad, and when you really go back and dig into what Jerry Tarkanian created at UNLV, it really is historical. And a lot of great stories. You know, Jerry Tarkanian nearly made the jump to the NBA. Why didn't that happen? That story is completely bizarre. Danny Tarkanian got into that as well. So those are going to be the segments here on this Best Of edition of Drive Time Sports. We'll have two with Danny Tarkanian. We'll have one with Billy Ripken as we talk Major League Baseball as well. It's all straight ahead, and it's right here on the Best Of Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
What could be better than high school football? And a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. What could be better than an afternoon soccer game? And a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. What could be better than a baseball game? And a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. You get the point, right? Everything is better when you add a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. Eating that juicy golden fried chicken and watching your team play live is the best combination ever. Get to KFC before your next game.
Hot and buttery, fresh popped popcorn. An ice cold Pepsi. Escape the stresses of the hectic work week and relax at the Price and King Cole Theaters.
Get a beautiful smile and a healthy one, too, with the help of Castle Valley Orthodontics. Sure, having a beautiful smile is a great reason to get braces, but there are many more reasons for considering orthodontic treatment. Proper orthodontic treatment prevents future dental problems like uneven wear on the teeth, speech difficulties, problems chewing, and even health problems like sleep apnea. A beautiful and healthy smile is what you get from Dr. Tom Chamberlain at Castle Valley Orthodontics. Give them a call today for a free consultation at 637-2222.
The choice is yours. Sutherland's Friends of the Family Plus Consumer Credit Card lets you choose from 5% off instantly at the register or special financing on qualifying purchases. That means no forms, no waiting, no rebates. You can choose 5% off instantly with your Sutherland's Credit Card. Got a big project? Choose special financing. The choice is yours with Sutherland's Friends of the Family Plus Consumer Credit Card. Subject to credit approval, minimum monthly payment required. See store for details. Only at Sutherland's.
Halloween is coming, and 2020 is the year to treat your little goblins and ghouls to something better than candy. Three Little Llamas and Helper will help you upgrade this year's treat with science kits, puzzles, or items from the all-new Melissa and Doug Disney line. Make this year's Halloween a real scream with the help from Three Little Llamas on Main Street in Helper.
Happy Halloween!
You are listening to the best of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now a 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball! Deep to left field! Way, way back! It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
I am thrilled to bring in our next guest here on the show. We're going to talk Major League Baseball. Our next guest spent 12 years in the big leagues, and now he's an analyst for MLB Network. He's also won an Emmy for the work that he does with the network. And he's got a new book out. It's called State of Play. That book is actually available for purchase right now. He's Bill Ripken. And Bill, it's a pleasure to get you on today. Thank you for fitting us into your busy schedule. I appreciate it.
I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Oh, it's definitely my pleasure. That is for sure. Let's talk about the new book, Bill, that you have now released. It's been out, I know, for a couple of weeks. It's called State of Play. And I find this so interesting because we are constantly going back and forth on this conversation on the show all the time about analytics and the new wave of baseball and the fact that you have people now running baseball teams that don't know much about the game. They are numbers gurus. And so when you look at State of Play, this is something that will kind of, maybe make more sense of those lines that go between the two.
Well, I put the book out there because I think over the past few years, with that onslaught of new front offices and people that haven't necessarily been in the game, they are numbers people, the assumption seems to be made over the past few years that old-school baseball guys don't like numbers and don't like information. And that's the farthest thing from the truth. We've always used numbers. We've always used information. But the difference is we use numbers and information that we can apply to baseball. And I believe there's some of these new terminologies that are thrown out there in the game today that really don't have much bearing on you hit it better, you pitch it better, you catch it better than the other team, and you win philosophy that maybe an old school guy might have.
One of my favorite quotes in the game of baseball comes from Lee Elia, former coach of the Cubs, where he said the name of the game is to hit the ball, catch the ball, and get the bleeping job done. You know, sometimes we overlook that. It's such a true statement in the game of baseball. But when we're looking at all these new terms as far as angles and all these new sayings and new stats in baseball, it does get a little bit aggravating, I think, for people that are just fans of the game.
Well, first of all, launch angle can be discussed, and we can just establish that launch angle is nothing more than the ball coming off the bat. That's what the launch angle is. The more that term has been used over the past few years, people are starting to equate it to a swing. The swing is not the launch angle. The ball coming off the bat is. Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, both had launch angles, and probably one that was designed around a home run. But that was their individual swing, so the fact that we can now measure the precise angle at what the ball is coming off the bat, we give it this little catching phrase of launch angle. It misleads people because then someone covering a game might say, well, he improved his launch angle. Well, Javi Baez turned himself into one of the league's better players. In 2016, he was good. 2017, he was better. 2018, he was better than that. And his average launch angle in the year actually went from 11 down to 9.2. So if you improve a launch angle, does it necessarily have to go up? Or can it go down in Javi Baez's case? And I believe in Javi Baez's case, he's much better for having a lower launch angle.
So explain to me spin rate, and pitch framing is one that I'm definitely familiar with. I think a lot of baseball fans are, but these are often two other terms that you will hear in today's game. So how does spin rate and pitch framing, what does that actually mean to the game?
Well, spin rate, it's never a bad thing to have good spin rate, but you can have the best spin rate in the world, and if you throw ball one, ball two, and you're behind every hitter, two balls and no strikes, your spin rate's going to get hit. Once again, spin rate's not new. They just have now the calibration to be able to measure the ball spinning to home plate. James Alvin Palmer used to throw high fastballs for the Orioles, and the old school guy used to say, well, he's got extra life. He's got some giddy up on that heater. And the ones that tell you that you can pitch up there like Jim Palmer did was the hitters, because they swung and missed it. So you don't need to necessarily have something calibrated to understand what it is. So once again, spin rate is not new. The ball is always spun to home plate. The fact that we can measure it and now we abuse the term, that's new. Now, pitch framing to me is very interesting because this is a measurement of a catcher basically deceiving the umpire. So in a chapter in the book, I basically say there's probably five or six other things that are more important on why a pitch is called a strike or a ball other than the catcher catching it. So, for example, if I'm facing Nolan Ryan back in the day, Nolan Ryan had a much better reputation than I did, and he got the benefit of the doubt on close pitches no matter who was catching. Wade Boggs and Frank Thomas had better strike zones than I think I did because they had better reputation going into it. And if you think about the ball crossing home plate is about 3.5 feet before the catcher even catches it anyway. So it's a strike 3.5 feet before the catcher catches it. So measuring pitch framing and trying to put a value on that for any said catcher is a little bit alarming to me because there's other things that enter into play before the catcher actually catches the ball.
Again, we're being joined right now by Bill Ripken. He was a 12-year Major League veteran, also an Emmy Award-winning analyst with MLB Network as we talk about his new book, State of Play. Bill, what went into you actually sitting down and writing this book? At what point in time did you say, okay, this is something I actually want to discuss. I want to kind of mix the nuances of today's game and the analytical world of today and maybe mix it with some of the teachings and some of the way that that I know the game. What was it that was the tipping point for you to say, okay, this is the book?
I just think the connotation was out there that the new school guys were just really, really smart people and the old school guys weren't. So when I started jotting down some notes probably January of 2019, and the more notes I started putting down and some of the phrases that are used, you know, defensive run saved is a stat that they used, and they make it like it's gospel, but it doesn't have anything to do with an actual defensive run saved. And that and WAR, W-A-R, they have formulas that are locked behind closed doors that my researchers don't even know how these things are calculated. And my researchers at the network are really good and smart people. So if you keep something locked behind closed door, and then you want to throw out every month, you know, this is what his DRS is and this is what his WAR is, and we can't even know what it means and how it was formulated, I've got issues with that.
So it almost comes across to me, Bill, and you could tell me if I'm completely wrong here, but just looking at the way that these particular statistics are almost hidden, is it a political game? Do you believe that it's political in the sense to where it's catered towards certain players, maybe more marketable players?
I don't know if it's political in that way. I think there's certain websites that keep their formulas under lock and key because they like generating these things, and there's people out there that value them. But if it's not out in front, I don't understand how it necessarily can be gospel. The other thing with defensive runs saved, they pit after the 2018 season. Chapman was listed at like 29 defensive runs saved as a third baseman for Oakland. Nolan Arenado was listed at 6. And I look at those numbers and say, well, you're telling me that Chapman's 5 times better than Nolan Arenado? And then I'll have some supporter of the DRS stats say, no, that's not what these numbers say. And then I have to in turn say, no, that's exactly what these numbers are saying. And if neither one of these numbers has anything to do with an actual defensive run saved, I don't know how we can be definitive at the end of the year saying he's 29 and he's 6. It just makes no sense to me.
Bill, I've often had this thought, especially as we start to use more and more of these analytical terms and we start to get more people who aren't baseball people into front offices and making personnel decisions, how much in your mind, or if at all, has fantasy baseball impacted the landscape of today's game with the amount of numbers that we are using?
Well, it kind of seems like we're in fantasy baseball when we're dealing with Major League Baseball, because all those numbers and everything that are used, the other thing is these formulas that get thrown out there, they seem to have a shelf life of a couple years. XFIP, when it first came on the scene 3 or 4 years ago, I mean, I was just getting nauseated about how many times I heard the term XFIP. And now I've not heard it anymore. You know, they come up with something else that they want to throw out there. DRS is a version of UZR, and now I've seen people pushing OAA, which is outs above average, more than DRS in the past few months. So if the formulas are not perfect, and they will say to you, oh, we know that these aren't perfect, okay, then don't throw them out there on us and expect us to use them as their gospel.
I definitely think that this book is going to bring up a lot of fun conversations with different people who have separate trains of thoughts on the way the game should be at least looked at in today's world, which I really, really like, Bill. So I have to ask you, what was your favorite part about this book? Is there a specific chapter that maybe you were a tad bit more passionate about, maybe a specific topic that you maybe even put a little bit more effort into, or maybe you even have a harder opinion than others in this book?
Well, I think two of the chapters, one was the launch angle and one was DRS, because those are misused and abused year-long during the baseball season. And I'm sure they'll be misused and abused all year-long in this next season. I enjoyed probably writing the introduction and the first chapter on my father probably as much as anything, just kind of laying out there some of things that are said to be new in the game aren't. These things have been going on forever. And just going back through and talking about my father's minor league days when he was the manager, and how when you stand at the top step of the dugout as the manager in the minor leagues and you watch every pitch of every game and you're in charge of getting players to the big leagues, there's no doubt in my mind I would prefer dad's eyeballs on a player in Double-A over any spreadsheet to tell me that that guy's going to play in the big leagues and be a productive player for my organization for years to come. So I just want to point out that the old school guy likes numbers. We use numbers, and there is no substitution. There really isn't for experience and somebody that's actually lived the game as far as getting an honest baseball answer.
Again, Bill Ripken, author of the book State of Play. It is available right now. You can get it off Amazon. You can find it in bookstores all over the country. Definitely check it out. It will provoke some interesting conversation, I have no doubt. Bill, before I let you go, you were just talking about your dad, and so I want to bring this up because I think it is so important in today's world that we talk about what you do past baseball, right? How do you guys inspire kids in today's world? You and your brother have co-founded the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation. I think this is a very, very fantastic thing. So I want to go off topic, if I can, for just a second and let you explain to the listening audience what the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation is and how you guys help out underprivileged communities.
Well, Senior was a teacher, first and foremost, and him and my mother were heavily involved in the Boys and Girls Club in Aberdeen, Maryland, where they grew up. And when we lost Dad, we started the foundation to affect some kids that needed some help. And we are so proud of the fact that that's morphed into now where sometime during the 2020 season, we will have built 100 youth development parks around the country. And these youth development parks are synthetic surface. It's a good, safe play area. We partner with either a Boys and Girls Club, a YMCA, a police athletic league. And when we raise the money and we build these fields, we gift them to the community that they belong to, because they already have the people there at these facilities that are willing to work with the kids on a day-in and day-out basis. But our theory, if we build these youth development parks and they're really nice in an area of need, we hope the kids after school will decide to go right to the field where people can care about them instead of going left where they might get into a little bit of trouble. So these parks are popping up all over the place around the country. If anybody wants to check out Cal Ripken Senior Foundation and look on there, you will wish you were a kid again to be able to go into some of these fields, because some of them are really, really nice.
Bill Ripken, former Major League Baseball player and analyst from MLB Network and author of the new book, State of Play. Bill, such a pleasure to get you on the show today. I definitely appreciate the time. It was a fun conversation. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you.
Again, that's Bill Ripken, former Major League Baseball player, now an analyst for the MLB Network. Of course, the brother of Hall of Famer Cal Ripken here on Drive Time Sports.
With my mom sick and me living out of town, it gets difficult to stay on top of her medications. I'm so grateful we found Pinnacle Peak Pharmacy. With their free home delivery service, I don't have to worry about how we'll get mom's medications to her. I can depend on Pinnacle Peak Pharmacy to make sure my mom has what she needs, so we can both have peace of mind.
Pinnacle Peak Pharmacy, adjacent to the Castleview Urgent Care Center. Transfer your medications today by going into the pharmacy or calling 637-6337.
Oh, wow, I am stiff. Oh, it's hard for me to bend down to get my shoes on. It just plain hurts no matter how I move.
This happens to a lot of people. Most feel they just need to keep going and it'll go away. You really need to see a doctor. Tell them about all of your aches and pains, then ask for a referral to Castle View Physical Therapy. Their doctors of physical therapy can help you get out of pain, then also teach you how to move and lift so you don't injure yourself again. Castle View Physical Therapy, helping you move better.
Accounting, agribusiness, business administration.
USU Eastern now offers 24 bachelor degree programs right here at our local campus.
English teaching, elementary education, family life studies, health education and promotion, history, human development and family studies, liberal arts, management information systems, marketing, mathematics education, psychology, recreation resource management.
Visit usueastern.edu for more information. USU Eastern, small enough to care, big enough to get you places.
This is Dr. Kelly Jensen of High Desert Orthopedics. I know that a quickly treated sports-related injury will heal faster and get your athlete back in the game sooner and healthier. That is why my staff at High Desert Orthopedics is committed to making sure your injury is assessed and treated started within 24 hours of when you contact my office in almost all situations. So if your athlete needs treatment, call High Desert Orthopedics at 637-BONE. High Desert Orthopedics, the best care your athlete deserves.
Internet is the backbone of your business, and like the ideal employee, your internet connection needs to be fast, reliable, and always ready for what's next. And wait, did we mention fast? Now, small to medium-sized businesses can afford high-speed data access with eFiber from Emory Telecom. Imagine being able to connect your entire office to the internet at speeds only large corporations could afford in the past. Give Emory Telecom a call, 613-9605, and connect your business to eFiber today.
Great. What am I going to do now?
We've all been in this situation. You're leaving for work and your car or truck won't start. Can't take it to a mechanic shop because, well, it won't start to even get it there. That's where Just-in-Time Auto Repair comes in, a mobile mechanic shop that comes to you. No need to worry about how you're going to get it fixed. Just-in-Time Auto Repair has you covered. Call 299-0833 to schedule an appointment today.
You are listening to the best of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 7:50, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Beagles.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, thrilled to bring in our next guest. He's the son of Hall of Fame legendary college basketball coach Jerry Tarkanian, Danny Tarkanian. Danny, who played for his dad once upon a time, obviously followed his career and has now released the new book, Rebel Without a Cause. This is the true story of Jerry Tarkanian. Danny, it is a pleasure to get you on the show today. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
I think we're going to have a fun conversation. You got to play for your dad, so you got to see him as a coach, got to know him as a father, got to follow his legendary career. You played for your dad, and I believe, if I read correctly, you guys won 24 consecutive games while you played. You saw some historical stuff as a player as well.
Yeah, I played for him from 1981 to 84. I came from Dixie Junior College my first year. I left the school as a leading person with assists and steals for game season and career. I didn't score very much, and that probably made it easier for me to play for my father because I hardly ever shot the ball. I passed it to all my other players, and they loved it that I didn't shoot, and they got to shoot.
Yeah, definitely. We'll get into that in just a moment, what it was like to play for your father. First off, I want to talk about the book. It's the true story of Jerry Tarkanian, Rebel with a Cause. I have it sitting in front of me right now. The first chapter I went to, and maybe I'm a little bit weird for doing this, but right off the bat, the chapter that stood out to me was the shortest stint for a coaching career in the NBA. I was really curious about Jerry Tarkanian's time with the San Antonio Spurs, and we can touch on that in just a moment. First things first, what was your inspiration for putting this book together?
Well, I grew up, as I mentioned in the book, I was a ball boy for my father. Then I was a former player, former coach, and actually his attorney through much of his NCAA battles. And I watched how his career was misconstrued, and the national media would write stories that weren't very accurate. And the NCAA had so much control over the media at that time that there never was a real true story about how my father was able to succeed going through the things that he did. And I wanted to write that. And then most recently, there's been so many stories about the NCAA and problems my father had to complain about the NCAA 40, 50 years ago, and he was shrugged off as just a bitter person who got caught cheating. Now you're seeing that these stories, same things he said before are true, and other schools are experiencing the same thing, and I thought it was a good timing for the book.
Yeah, you know, I guess my perception of Jerry Tarkanian has always been this, a legendary coach that maybe he did play by the rules, maybe he didn't play by the rules. I mean, I guess it's all in perception, right? I know there's a lot of insight into that in this book, but that's always been my thought. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't.
Well, you know, and that's one reason why I wanted to write it, to clarify, because I had all the documentation from the NCAA investigations, the court documents, their investigation notes. Listen, my father cheated like every other coach in the country is cheating. You have to cheat with what the NCAA rules are today and age kids that are playing. Just for background for the listeners, the NCAA enforcement arm started in the 1950s, and the rules that were made applied to the kids that were playing back then, kids from affluent families with discretionary income. From the 60s on, the poor inner-city African-American kids that did not have any discretionary income, in fact, their families could barely afford the places they were living in at their home location, started dominating in the collegiate sports, and these same rules didn't apply. For example, you can't pay for a player to come to your school. So if you recruit a kid out of Fort Apache in the Bronx in New York, one of the worst high-rise areas in the entire country, very poor Richie Adams was a player, and he wants to come to school at UNLV. How did he get there? It's a violation to pay for him to get there. And every coach in the country who's recruiting these players are finding a way to get money to someone to pay for those kids to get there. Then once they come to school, my father's biggest complaint was the NCAA rules would make these kids live in extreme poverty, well below the standard living of the fellow classmates, and he thought that was wrong, particularly for considering the billions of dollars these athletes were bringing in. He was against, my father said, any large cheating, giving out large sums of money, buying them cars, doing anything of substantial value. But if you wanted to have a kid over for dinner, you should be able to do that as a coach. And my father did that. If a kid didn't have anything to wear and he was going someplace and he needed to get a new jacket or something, you bought him a jacket. And everything was all minor stuff. And, you know, one of the big violations they found against UNLV was they were providing free transportation to student athletes. Well, the free transportation was picking the kid up from his apartment and driving him to school when he wasn't in class. You know, they just make the violations look bad, and they're not really bad. So every coach who's recruiting and those type of athletes are all making, they're all cheating the same way, and they all know it. It's the big cheaters, the ones that you're seeing now with the shoe companies paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to come to your school that should be hammered by the NCAA. And they never even made an allegation my dad gave anything of substantial value to a recruit or any of his boosters or coaches.
Again, our guest right now is Danny Tarkanian, the son of legendary coach Jerry Tarkanian. And Danny, when you talk about the success that your dad had, putting the NCAA allegations and the troubles with the NCAA aside, I've always felt that one of the biggest sticking points for your father in winning at the college level was the fact that he had that natural knack to find talent. And a lot of the times, he would even dig into junior college transfers, which is so interesting to me, especially here in this area where we have junior college basketball that's played at an extremely high level. You grab a kid like Larry Johnson, and you can get him to buy in playing together, playing fast, playing, I guess, in a different realm with kids who have already committed to a four-year school, bypassing that junior college level. That's what was fascinating to me about your father.
Yeah, and I went through that a lot in the book. Most of the kids that go to junior college are kids that either were poor students or got in trouble off the court. My father, when he was growing up, he was Armenian heritage that was growing up in the Central Valley, California, so they were discriminated against. They had no money. He was a horrible student. It took him 6 years to graduate from college, and he said if he hadn't met my mother, it'd been 10 years. He was got in trouble off the court doing stupid things. So he understood these players that he was recruiting. A lot of coaches wouldn't touch these players. In fact, in the book, I have a quote from Matt Doherty. He used to coach with Roy Williams, and he said, "Danny, don't take this the wrong way, but we wouldn't recruit the players your father does. We just couldn't coach them because these guys all had problems." Well, my dad understood those problems because of the way he grew up. He was able to motivate these players through sarcasm and wit as opposed to being a tyrant and a bully. And he got them to play together cohesively as a team. These players had the same type of talent as those great players that were going to UCLA and Duke, except they weren't as good as students, and they had personal problems off the court. And my father felt that he could win with them, and he did.
Your dad goes to UNLV in 1973, and the school hadn't been around, at least for a Division I program, for that very long. And I think in today's day and age, where we're talking about professional sports in Las Vegas, right, we have the Golden Knights. We'll soon have the Las Vegas Raiders. I don't think it's that far off from having an NBA team in Vegas. All this being said, people need to remember that the first big sports show in Las Vegas, that was UNLV. Going back to 1983, this was because of Tarcadian success. You got to see this up close and personal. And it wasn't just the game, and it wasn't just the athletes that he was bringing in. It was the pregame fireworks. There were theatrics. It was the first big show in Vegas for a sporting event. That revolves around UNLV and Jerry Tarcadian.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly right, and I touched upon that in the book. Las Vegas is the entertainment capital of the world, and the biggest entertainment show in Las Vegas during my father's 19 years there was the Running Rebels. They played not only one big, but they played the most exciting brand of basketball you can play. In 1975-76, they started the run-and-gun style of play with a pressure defense. They averaged 108 points a game and 110 points a game those 2 years. That was without the shot clock or the three-point line. So you're playing this exciting brand of basketball. You're winning big. There is fourth year at UNLV. They went to the Final Four and lost to a North Carolina team by 1 point who had four Olympians on it and coached by the Olympic coach. So they were winning. They had the exciting brand of basketball. But you said, the great pregame show. I mean, it was amazing. We had fireworks. We had the strobe lights. We had the laser sharks, and it was something else. And we had Gucci Row, which is like what the Lakers have now, where all their movie stars would come and sit in the front row, or the real wealthy people. We had Gucci Row before that, where you had Frank Sinatra, Diana Ross, Dean Martin, they'd come to the games. Wayne Newton was singing the national anthem. Some of them would even come to practice. You couldn't get a ticket to the game. It was impossible. They used to have people sitting in the aisles where there was a fire risk, and they would just let it go because you couldn't get them to move. It was a wonderful experience, something that you appreciate so much more after it's done.
Danny, and again, I haven't read the entire book, and so this question I'm going to ask you, if it is discussed at all in the book, I apologize. I heard a rumor once upon a time that Gucci Row, and again, as you were just mentioning, where you had the rich and famous sitting courtside, that had a lot to do with your dad. Is it true that your dad had negotiated a certain ticket allotment into his contract with UNLV?
He did, but not for any Gucci Row seats. They gave him the seats up higher. Gucci Row was the front row where the scholarship people who had all the money and or the celebrities that had to pull the juice, they sat. But my father did. He actually he got so many seats, I forget, when under his contract. I think it was 10% at the convention center, which was at that time 6,000 some. So we got like 64 seats to each game. Then when they went to the Thomas and Mack Center, it was 18,000. So he was provided several hundred tickets. And he used those tickets to give them out to boosters around town, casino hosts. And in exchange, he went anywhere he wanted in Las Vegas, ate for free. He would go to shows for free. It was something that it's unheard of in today's day and age of corporate ownership of these casinos. But back then, it was the most amazing time to grow up in.
Well, Danny, there's plenty more I would love to talk with you about. We do got a break for just a moment. Do you have time to hang around for one more segment?
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect. More coming up with Danny Tarcadian, the son of Jerry Tarcadian. We'll talk about his new book and more about his father's legendary career right here on Drive Time Sports. The NFL returns to KOAO 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. Thursday night.
Now second and two. It's number 22 McCaffrey in. for a Carolina touchdown.
It's an NFC South battle as the Atlanta Falcons travel to take on Christian McCaffrey and the Carolina Panthers. Live coverage begins at 6 p.m., followed by kickoff at 6:20. The Falcons and the Panthers, Thursday on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m.
Hot and buttery, fresh popped popcorn. An ice cold Pepsi. Escape the stresses of the hectic work week and relax at the Price and King Cole Theaters.
What could be better than high school football? And a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. What could be better than an afternoon soccer game? And a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. What could be better than a baseball game? And a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. You get the point, right? Everything is better when you add a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. Eating that juicy golden fried chicken and watching your team play live is the best combination ever. Get to KFC before your next game.
Ugh, wow, I am stiff. Ugh, it's hard for me to bend down to get my shoes on. It just plain hurts no matter how I move.
This happens to a lot of people. Most feel they just need to keep going and it'll go away. You really need to see a doctor. Tell them about all of your aches and pains. Then ask for a referral to Castle View Physical Therapy. Their doctors of physical therapy can help you get out of pain. Then also teach you how to move and lift so you don't injure yourself again. Castle View Physical Therapy, helping you move better.
Hey, Carbon County, this is Mike Corianis, Price City Mayor. Water is a valuable resource and we need to get serious about it. Price City and the NRCS have teamed up on the Upper Price River Watershed Environmental Study to ensure we are using our water effectively and efficiently as possible. Join us for our online public meeting Thursday, October 29th from 5:30 to 6:30 to learn about the study and how to get involved. Visit upperpriceriver.eis.com for more information.
If you like to bowl, then listen up. It's time to sign up for fall bowling leagues at Gateway Lanes. We've all been socializing with Zoom and social media for what seems like forever now, but it's time to put those cell phones and screens down and get out for some face-to-face fun with friends. Bowling is America's fastest-growing recreational sport, and there's no time like the present to get started. Sign up before they're all filled up. Call Gateway Lanes at 472-5015 today.
You're listening to the best of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. We're back on Drive Time Sports, continuing our conversation right now with Danny Tarkanian, the son of legendary college basketball coach Jerry Tarkanian, and also the author of the new book, Rebel with a Cause. It's the true story of Jerry Tarkanian. Just looking at what your father has accomplished, I mean, it's absolutely incredible when you take a look at the amount of wins that he put together in a decade span. I mean, it even eclipses some of the greatest college basketball coaches to ever live. For instance, a 10-year period from 83 to 92 at UNLV, 307 wins. That's more than what Bob Knight ever did in Indiana. It's more what I like to call John Wooden, the greatest coach, I believe, of all time. It's more than he accumulated with UCLA, more than Adolph Rupp, more than Fog Allen with the Kansas Jayhawks. And I know that some people could say, well, they play more games today, but nobody else has come close to that in a 10-year span. And so, Danny, as you and I were having a conversation off the cuff, you had mentioned that you wanted to talk about the way your father motivated players, which was a little bit unorthodox compared to some of the coaches that I just named.
Yeah, and you know, he only lost, I believe, 30 games during that 10-year period. So he lost games a year and was winning 30, which is, it hasn't been matched before. And they were on a run my dad was first out of UNLV to have even better teams. He had Ed O'Bannon, Charles O'Bannon, and Sean Tarver trying to come to UNLV. They took UCLA to the final, to the national championship in 85, and he had Jason Kidd committed as a sophomore. But that being said, what I wanted to get across in the book, one of the most important things to me is to show the kind of person my father had in his relationship with the players and why that led to such success. In the 60s and early 70s, the coaches back then were always considered the boss, the tyrants. You know, they would yell and motivate their players through intimidation. Bobby Knight's a great example. My father was a complete opposite. He felt that if you got really close with these players, particularly ones that had problems off the court or in the classroom, and you created a close bond with them, you can get them to play harder than any other team in the country. And he would motivate us through sarcasm and wit. He would say something that, and I'll give you an example. When I was playing in 1983, we didn't play hard in practice one day, so he called the team together and he said, "You guys are all a bunch of bandits. Next time you pick up your scholarship check, wear a mask and gun because you're robbing the university." And, you know, we're sitting there wanting to laugh because it's pretty darn funny, but scared to death by the way he said it. But what we did was we went out and we played harder than you could possibly imagine after that. And there's numerous examples of my father being like that. And also being very honest with players. When normally you wouldn't want to be honest, the politically correct people wouldn't accept these things. And I'll give another example. When I played, we were 24-0 and number one in the country, and some of our players were complaining. My father favored our two best players, Sidney Green and Larry Anderson. So my dad called the team together, and he said, "I understand some of you think I'm favoring Sid and Larry. I just want you to know that I am. Sid and Larry are carrying us. Without them, we wouldn't be 24-0. If we're on a desert island with one cantina of water, I'm going to make sure Sid and Larry have everything they want to drink. If there's anything left over, I might share with the rest of you." That's what all of us were thinking at that time. But you know what? We knew that he was honest, that he was telling us the truth, and deep down we also knew Larry and Sid were carrying us, and we ended up having a great team that year.
You were obviously around in 1990, around your dad, when UNLV wins the national championship. And that story, that's the one sad part. And I think this is just history, right? This is the way it works in sports. It's a "what have you done for me lately" type deal. While this team may have won a national championship in 1990, 1991 is probably, they're in the conversation to be the greatest college basketball team ever. And they didn't win a national championship. And I think it's a true testament to just how difficult it is to win a title when it's a one-game-and-done type scenario. Because your father had coached several teams that were more than capable of winning a national championship, but maybe none more so than that 1991 team.
Oh, absolutely. My dad will say unequivocally the 91 team was his best team they ever coached. They had a national schedule, a non-conference schedule of top 10 teams all across the board, including the number two team, Arkansas, at Arkansas. And they only had one game within 10 points in the entire season until they lost to Duke by two. And, you're right. It's tough to repeat. And I know that there was a lot of pressure on those players. And then people forget how good Duke was. Duke had some great, great players on that team. Leitner and Hurley, two of the best college players ever. And Grant Hill, one of the great NBA players. It's not really a shocker in retrospect, but it was back then.
Looking at the accomplishments that your father put together, unfortunately, it did come to an end based off of really three players being photographed in a hot tub with a convicted sports event fixer, and it was never proven that those individuals took part in any sort of fixing, but at that particular time it seemed like the damage was done. When you go back and you look at what your father still had left to accomplish at UNLV, he may be considered the greatest college basketball coach that ever lived if he was able to coach another, 10 years at the school.
Well, they had forced him out of UNLV because of those hot tub pictures when he was 60 years old. He had another 15 or 20 years to coach. And as I mentioned previously, he was bringing in better players at the end than they ever had at the beginning. And they would have won another several national championships. But when you talk about the hot tub picture, it's really that was the final straw of so much more. But I want to clarify something with the hot tub pictures. The reason why it had such a major impact was when we lost to Duke by two, there was a rumor spread by the athletic director that one of our players, Stacy Ogden, was in the locker room crying after the game and because he threw the game. It was a bunch of BS. That didn't happen, but they were trying to discredit my father so they can find a way to force him out. Those three players in the hot tub, first of all, the convicted felon, point shaver you're talking about, he had changed his name so people didn't know his background, and he was a former AAU coach in New York City, and he coached a bunch of players from back there, including Moses Scurry, who was one of the players in that hot tub. But when you talk about whether they point shade, Moses Scurry and David Butler had won the national championship and graduated before that picture came out, and they weren't even on the team that lost to Duke the next year. The only player in the hot tub on the team that lost to Duke was Anderson Hunt. He was our best player. He had 30 or 32 points in the game. He obviously didn't throw the game. So there was nothing to it, but there was just accumulation of stuff. And I went through this in the book. I'll try to be real quick because I know this is taking a lot of time. Is when my father first came to UNLV, he was very controversial, fighting the NCAA, bringing in those type of players that I mentioned. But UNLV, Las Vegas, had a horrible reputation too, so it was like a perfect match, Sin City with this controversial coach, Drake, and all these at-risk kids. Well, Las Vegas wanted to change his image in the late 80s. Steve Wynn was building the family casinos, and they brought in a new president who said that UNLV was going to be the Harvard of the West. When all that happened, my dad's still fighting the NCAA, and he's still bringing in the same kids, and they felt that my father's image was bringing down the university. There's a lot of quotes in the book from people who have mentioned the same thing. So they forced my father out basically because they wanted to change the image of the university and felt my father's image was bringing him down. It really wasn't a hot tub picture. It was just the avenue that allowed them to get there.
Again, I mentioned at the beginning of the interview, I was fascinated by the idea of reading about Jerry Tarkanian's time with the San Antonio Spurs, because a lot of people don't remember that. It was such, it's such a small footnote when you look over the history of his career, but you did talk about that. I know it's a very short chapter because, well, it was a very short tenure with the San Antonio Spurs. What do you remember most about that?
Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot to write about. Well, I just, the things that, the decisions that change your life and what happens is really big. My father was offered the job when he left UNLV by the Philadelphia 76ers. The owner loved my dad, and my dad loved Charles Barkley. And Charles wasn't a big name at that time. He had become the superstar he ultimately would. But the Sixers weren't very good, and my dad didn't feel he would have that much time left in his coaching career to turn them into a winner. When Larry Brown left San Antonio, San Antonio had one of the best teams in the NBA, so my dad jumped at it when he was offered that job. The only problem is three of his five starters weren't available when the season started. Two of them got hurt and were out the entire year, and the third one was the worst one. He's a great point guard named Rod Strickland that Spurs didn't re-sign, let him go to the Portland Trailblazers. So my dad complained about the players that were on the team. They were losing. He lost 11 games out of 20, and that's more losses than he had in his last 3 years at UNLV. So he complained in the papers about his roster. So the owner and the general manager called him in and said, if you don't think you can win with this roster, you should leave. And my dad said, well, I think we can't win with this roster. So he left. The NBA is different. The owner and the general manager tells the coach what players he's going to coach. And in college, the coach gets to determine which players he's coaching. And that just didn't work for my father.
In the late 70s, there's a rumor that your dad was at least a front runner for the Los Angeles Laker coaching job. And again, revisionist history, just going back and looking at that Lakers 80s dynasty for your dad to coach a guy like Magic Johnson, who loved to play at the fast pace, right? I mean, that was showtime, right? How close was your dad to taking that job with the Los Angeles Lakers in the late 70s? And how special could that run have been with him at the helm?
Yeah, probably 30 minutes was the difference between him being a Laker coach and not. And my father said when the Lakers had the first draft and Magic put his name in it that the Lakers were going to win a bunch of championships because of how great Magic was. He knew how good they were going to be. First of all, the Lakers offered him a job, and actually there was a contract that was provided to my dad's agent, who was my dad's boyhood friend. Close with them. His name was Vic Weiss, and I go through this in the book. Vic Weiss met with the owner of the Lakers, Jerry Buss. And I'm sorry. He met with Jerry Buss, and Jerry gave him the signed contract with his signature on it. And he was to meet my mother and father for dinner right after he left the Buss's meeting. And he was never seen again. Somehow somebody got a hold of him, killed him, and stuck him in a trunk. And when my dad learned of it, he was very disheartened, and he still wanted to. Wasn't sure he wanted to go coach the NBA because he really loved the college game, and he decided not to go do it. I know he had a lot of regrets the rest of his life because we would watch those NBA finals, and he'd say, isn't this big time? Look how much fun this would have been.
The next guy in line there in the 80s was going to have a lot of success with that Laker team. It really didn't matter who it was, right? And so we talk about what your dad built at UNLV. He'd have been front and center in L.A.
Yeah, he would have, and I think he would have won big there, too, and he certainly would have had an incredible experience. But, you know, again, he was made for college coaching because he was able to work with and develop and help kids that needed them the most. In the NBA, they're all millionaires. They don't need somebody to help guide them through their personal and social problems they were having. So, in an overall standpoint, you know, what more what plates did my dad have a bigger impact? It certainly was in the college game.
Oh, no question. There's no question about it. And still today, if you walk the campus of UNLV or if you visit the Thomas and Mack Center, your dad has definitely been memorialized there. He's almost immortal when you talk about UNLV basketball. Even with the state it's in now, there are still people that will travel around to either take a picture with the statue out front or at least get a glimpse of Jerry Tarkanian, the court itself, which, of course, also pays homage to your father.
Yeah, you know, I got a son named Jerry. He's 10 years old, and about 2 years ago, we're driving around town, and there was this Jerry Tarkanian Way, the street they named after him, and he'd already seen the statue in the court. And he says to me, "Dad, thank you so much for calling for naming me Jerry." I said, "Why is that?" And he goes, "Because they named so many things after me." I said, "That in itself makes it worthwhile."
Danny, before I let you go, I want to get your take on the book once again, Rebel with a Cause, which is available right now for anyone who is interested in reading more about the legendary career of Jerry Tarkanian. Back to your inspiration for the book and what your ultimate goal was in releasing it.
Well, I wanted people to understand the kind of person my father was and the true success that he had. He was a person with no ego at all. He would always try to learn something from other coaches that were not nearly as acclaimed as him. He had this great relationship with people, not only the players, as I mentioned, but the fans, big boosters. He got along with everybody, knew how to deal with people. And then I wanted to, you know, explain the struggles that he had with the NCAA and, you know, why what his position was really a very needed position because he was a voice for the kids that didn't have a voice and were being taken advantage of by the NCAA structure and the rules that they implemented. So I'm hoping that I got that across in the book and that the readers will have a better understanding of the kind of person my father was.
It's available right now, The True Story of Jerry Tarkanian, A Rebel with a Cause. Again, Danny Tarkanian, our guest right now. Danny, it was a pleasure to chat with you over the last 30 minutes to talk about your father's legendary career. I can't wait to finish reading the book. I really appreciate the time. It was a pleasure.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on.
Excellent conversation with Danny Tarkanian, again, the son of legendary coach Jerry Tarkanian and author of the new book, Rebel with a Cause. That's going to do it for us today. We will be back again on Thursday. Tomorrow, we'll be back in the broadcast booth for Emory High School Baseball as the Spartans will go toe-to-toe with Payson. Live coverage of that game will begin at about 2:45 tomorrow right here on KOAL. Be safe. I am out.
Get a beautiful smile and a healthy one, too, with the help of Castle Valley Orthodontics. Sure, having a beautiful smile is a great reason to get braces, but there are many more reasons for considering orthodontic treatment. Proper orthodontic treatment prevents future dental problems like uneven wear on the teeth, speech difficulties, problems chewing, and even health problems like sleep apnea. A beautiful and healthy smile is what you get from Dr. Tom Chamberlain at Castle Valley Orthodontics. Give them a call today for a free consultation at 637-2222.
If you like to bowl, then listen up. It's time to sign up for fall bowling leagues at Gateway Lanes. We've all been socializing with Zoom and social media for what seems like forever now, but it's time to put those cell phones and screens down and get out for some face-to-face fun with friends. Bowling is America's fastest-growing recreational sport, and there's no time like the present to get started. Sign up before they're all filled up. Call Gateway Lanes at 472-5015 today.
This is Dr. Kelly Jensen of High Desert Orthopedics. I know that a quickly treated sports-related injury will heal faster and get your athlete back in the game sooner and healthier. That is why my staff at High Desert Orthopedics is committed to making sure your injury is assessed and treated started within 24 hours of when you contact my office in almost all situations. So if your athlete needs treatment, call High Desert Orthopedics at 637-BONE. High Desert Orthopedics, the best care your athlete deserves.
Accounting, agribusiness, business administration.
USU Eastern now offers 24 bachelor degree programs right here at our local campus.
English teaching, elementary education, family life studies, health education and promotion, history, human development and family studies, liberal arts, management information systems, marketing, mathematics education, psychology, recreation resource management.
Visit usueastern.edu for more information. USU Eastern, small enough to care, big enough to get you places.
Listen to Drive Time Sports weekdays 4 to 5 on News Talk 107.3 FM at 7:50 a.m. KOAL.